Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend. This is the book show, something we all look forward to. And boy, do I have a panel for you, and we have a brand new book to discuss, along with several terrific recommendations. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Chris is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library and comes to us every month with quick picks. Those are the books everybody wants to read. Chris Hickey's going to tell you how to jump the line. There is no show without Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, which is important to anyone who loves to read, is thelongestchapter.com. And I am delighted to welcome my neighbor, my friend, Professor Emerita of Creative Writing at Ohio State University, a writer, a published author, a dancer with a new book out, Michelle Herman. Welcome, everybody.
It's so good to be here.
Now, I want to start with a quick pick. Sometimes Chris Hickey brings us dirty books, but you promised nothing.
Nothing naughty today.
Give us a recommendation.
All right, so let's talk about the hottest quick pick right now, which is called Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins. So this is a Hunger Games novel. So let me just kind of set up the Hunger Games for people who may not have read it. The original trilogy is about a country. There's a capital, there's 12 districts, and the districts rose up and rebelled against the capital. They were squashed, and ever since then, they have had something called the Hunger Games to punish the districts. So every district has to give up a boy and a girl, teenage age. They go into arena and fight to the death. So there's one victor. And I mean, it's brutal, it's awful. It's a phenomenal trilogy if you've never read it. So there's a series of prequels that she's written. The first one, which is A Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, is the backstory of President Snow. This new one is the story of Haymitch. Now, if you've seen the movies and not read the books, this is the Woody Harrelson character. So Haymitch is the man. He's the only District 12 victor. District 12 is like West Virginia. So they are a coal producer, highly impoverished, the most impoverished of the districts. And this is his story. And we get to see who he is, because he's a huge part of the trilogy. But who was he when he was part of the Reaping, when he went into the Hunger Games? We know that he's a victor. We know that he is the only survivor of this group, but we don't know how he survived. And so this is the story of that. And I'm in the midst of reading it right now. But what I loved is getting to know who he was before the trauma. Because when we meet him in the Hunger Games, he's an alcoholic and just, he's a hot mess. This is when he's young, he's in love, he's helping provide for his mother and his brother. And on the day of the Reaping, which is this very evil raffle, if you will, where they draw the names out of these bowls. And his name is not drawn, but something happens at the Reaping, and then he ends up being what's called a tribute and is whisked away to the Capitol. And he has no illusions of surviving. He does not expect to survive in the arena, but he does. And so this is the story of that.
Did you say this was the leading quick pick right now in the library?
Yes, there's over 1,000 holds
really
right now. So this was a highly anticipated. If you haven't read these books, they are page turners. She's an excellent storyteller. Yeah. And they're dark, but they're also compelling, and the characters are just people you root for. And Haymitch was one of my favorite characters in The Hunger Games, and I was excited to get this one.
And you don't argue with success. Remind us what a quick pick is.
So a quick pick, these are the hot books that have long hold lists. So if you are on hold for a book, you can come into one of our buildings, and there's a display in every building. And you might see the book there. You can check that out and skip the line.
Is it Tuesday they come out?
Tuesday is the release date. So you will see new ones in every building.
Same one in every branch.
Same one. There with the same copies are in every building.
Would you recommend someone read that book for if they've never read The Hunger Games? Would you recommend they read that book first?
I would start with The Hunger Games because I think it's important to know who Haymitch was and have that world building. I think you need to have the Hunger Games trilogy world building to really get a lot out of this. You don't have to have read The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, but it helps. And I just read that, you know, just a few weeks ago. And there are some threads in there that you'll be okay without, but it's a richer experience if you know what these things mean.
I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about books with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Metropolitan Library, with Cassie Rose, and Michelle Herman is going to, in a little while, tell us all about her new book. But I want Cassie Rose to give us a recommendation. I have the T-shirt. If Cassie says read it, read it. So.
Well, I've got a great book that is coming out on Tuesday next week. It's called Twist by Colm McCann. Colm McCann wrote a book called Let the Great World Spin, which I absolutely loved. He won the National Book Award for it. And I loved this book, too. Twist is about the cable breakage of undersea cables that carry all of our digital information. I mean, that's essentially the incident that happens in the book, but it's about so much more. And the narrator is a playwright and a journalist who is going to cover an article about cable breakage. He's going to get on a boat called the George Lequin off of the port of Cape Town in South Africa, and when a cable breaks, and go with them. So he's in Cape Town, and it's really kind of a chilling moment for us to read it, because he sees suddenly there are lines at the ATM, nobody has cell phone coverage, the internet is down, you walk into a cafe, you have to pay cash. And he realizes, okay, this is the moment, there's been a cable breakage. So he gets on board the ship, the cable repair ship, and meets John Conway, a fellow Irishman. And John Conway is the mission chief. And they're going off to the west coast of Africa to find the break. Now, that part of the novel actually is quite fascinating because of how they are dropping the large hook down to the ocean floor and dragging it. And it takes days, and it takes 15 hours even to do one just dragging to find this broken cable. But meanwhile, the bigger story is about the narrator and about John Conway. Conway has a dark side to him, and our narrator, the journalist, becomes obsessed with this dark side and wants to ferret that out, and so just lingers in his orbit. So that really provides some great momentum for the story, but also sort of a philosophic side to it, too, because our narrator is very introspective. Another part of it, too, is that he really wanted to pursue an article about repair because he himself feels that he's damaged. He's lived a wreck of a life, drinking too much, and now he's on a boat where there is no alcohol. And so you get caught up with this narrator, this introspective narrator, his going after John Conway, what happens, the confrontation when he realizes Conway is not who he said he was. And at the same time, we are reading this book and learning that most of our digital information, it doesn't come from the satellites and the cloud, and it's traveling under on the ocean floor. And you get this sense of the vulnerability of it. He doesn't overemphasize it. He's not writing a book to drive home a point. He's just telling a really, really good story.
Twist by Colm McCann.
Yeah,
that's a recommendation from Cassie Rose. And that's a very frightening thought. Can you imagine walking down the street and everything just all of a sudden stops because the cables are gone? And you have to live like some of us grew up, you know, carrying cash and, you know, and not having instant access, et cetera. And some of us may long for them days.
Well, I'll tell you, after reading the book, I thought, maybe I'll go to the ATM.
Yes, I know. Yes.
You know, get a little bit of extra cash.
Thank you, Cassie Rose. Now, Michelle Herman, I wondered when you announced you were going to retire from the faculty at The Ohio State University. I said, well, my God, she's been there for a while. She's worked very hard. So she's probably going to sit on her porch and just put her feet up. And here you are with yet another book. And there's an old line, don't stop dancing. You haven't stopped dancing.
Well, I had to start dancing before I could stop dancing.
Let's talk about your new book, which is called If You Say So, a new collection of essays by Michelle Herman, which has just been published. Tell us about this book.
So the book is both a collection of all the essays I have written since 2018, 2019, something along. So the last 5 years, So it is charting a course through what my life has been like in my late 60s. But it also surprised me, because when I was putting together the essays into a book, that they really did form a story, I think, that there is sort of an arc to it, because the story I'm telling really begins when I started to dance at the age of 62.
How did that happen? Did you wake up one morning and say, I'm 62, it's time to start dancing?
I actually, so I tell the story in the book, I woke up one morning and a dance studio had opened on the corner where I live. And, you know, like a lot of people my age and probably a lot of people much younger, I'd been thinking for years, I have got to find a way to get my body moving or I'm going to be wrecked. And, you know, how lazy would you have to be not to try a ballet class if it's 200 some odd steps from your door? So I walked over there and I took my first ever ballet class, and I fell in love. I started crying in the middle of class.
First class, what do they have you do, your very first class?
Well, there were only three of us in that class because the studio had just opened, and the teacher, who has now become a dear friend, Philippe Pellacci, very quickly realized that the class could not be taught the way they had planned to, because none of us knew anything. So in the years since, the studio has now been open since the summer of 2017, they have absolute beginner ballet.
They're very busy, too.
And then beginner ballet, and then beginner intermediate. But we have classes at every level. But I had to learn nomenclature and how to stand, and where to put my arms. But by the end of the class, I was completely hooked. Who knew? I had no idea. I'd never even been much of a viewer of ballet. And I signed up on that day for an unlimited monthly class pass, which I actually say in the book, I've forgotten the number now, many, many hundreds of times it has been automatically renewed in the 8 years since I joined the studio. So the book talks about, you know, how dance really changed my life. It really has. Not only do I take ballet class 6 days a week, I take other dance classes. On Sundays, I'm there for over 4 hours. And I've started performing. And in fact, here's an exclusive for you, Christopher. A friend of mine, Mallory Rowell, and I have co-choreographed and directed our first dance piece. And it's called If You Say So, after the book. And we're going to perform it in Columbus 3 times over the next several months. So I'm very excited about that. It's kind of a dance about the book. It's a dance about dance. It's short. Man, it's really hard to make a dance piece. It's very short. It's like 4 minutes long.
But what a trajectory in just a few years, going from your very first ballet class, and you don't know what a jeté is.
That's right.
And to now choreographing a number and writing about it.
And you know, so the book is, so it's about dance, but it's not only about dance. And
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought when we take a break. I want you to get the flux and flow going when we come back.
Absolutely.
In just a moment. We are going to take a quick break. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show. Don't go away.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back, All Sides Weekend Books, here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Christopher Purdy, talking with Cassie Rose, WOSB book critic, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library with Quick Picks, and Michelle Herman, whose new book is If You Say So, and Maggie Smith, a much-loved writer, a local writer with an international reach as well, says, Michelle Herman's beautiful writing reminds me that experience is metaphor. Her stories leave us thinking about our own. I think that's a wonderful compliment. Is this book rooted in dance, in your experience, or your sort of life journey?
I would say that the book is rooted in my life. And because dance has become such a big part of it, that's the entry point into the book. The book is divided into three parts. The first part really does kind of explore my experience of dance and what it's meant to me. But I came to dance, you know, I said I went and tried the studio Flux Flow in Clintonville. I went to the studio because it was right there, but also I was in not great shape in my life. It was a really low point. And the book ends up kind of sideways approaching a subject that's really hard to write about, which is grief, and reinvention, which is exciting to write about. And so as I move from talking about my dance journey, so to speak, I kind of retrace a lot of what brought me to it. And so there are stories about, I think of it as true stories, about my father, who was an enormously important figure in my life, was a newspaper man in the 60s in New York. And that's a story I've never told before. So I'm telling that story, the story of his death, which had occurred not that long before I started dancing. And then other things that have happened over the last several years. I think that the period of time as one begins to approach one's seventh decade is relatively unexplored in literature. I can think of very few books that really have focused on it. Diana Adhill's On Toward the End is the best book I have ever read about getting old.
I'm writing that one down.
It's a very quick read. On Toward the End.
Okay.
It's something I've been thinking about my entire life. I mean, my first novel was about a 90-year-old woman. And I remember...
To this day, it's one of my favorite books.
It's called Missing.
Yeah. And every time I see you, I say that to you.
Well, I'll tell you, when I finished that book, I think I've talked about this before. Originally, it was supposed to be part of a trilogy, the grandmother's story, the mother's story, the daughter's story. And when I finished it, I was just so sick of, it took me so long to write and it was so intense. I remember saying to my literary agent, I want to write about young people now. And she said, what do you know about young people? And I was 32. So, I've been kind of, and my grandmother was such an important force in my life. I've written about her a great deal. So it all sort of ended up in this book. And honestly, the original book ended after the penultimate essay in this book, a long essay, a novella-length essay called Animal Behavior, which is sort of the story of my life with companion animals. And it takes a tragic turn. And the publisher had accepted it, and the title of the book was going to be Animal Behavior. And he was worried about the title. He was afraid people would think it was a book about Jane Goodall. and then a dear friend of mine, someone I got to know through dance and who I saw every day for years, suddenly died. And it was devastating, and it brought our entire community. We have Flux Flow has a very intense, close-knit community, brought us together. And it also kind of brought me back around because I ended up being the person dealing with all of her stuff that was left behind. She didn't have family. So that ended up, I wrote this essay and I called my publisher and said, is it too late to add another essay? Would you read it? And I didn't know until he read it that he felt it brought the entire book together, that it was something that had been missing. And it's called If You Say So, because If You Say So was something my dear friend Judith Schwartzbaum used to say to me all the time when she was humoring me, when I would say, Judith, please count to 10 before you speak. She would say, If You Say So, but then she wouldn't.
If You Say So is Michelle Herman's latest book. I think we said it's your 10th book.
It is.
It's your 10th book, latest book so far. It is just published. It is available. Can we talk about your launch?
Sure.
There's a launch party at the Columbus Dance Theater on East Main Street on April 19th with a reading at 4:30 p.m.
And I would also add that I'm going to be reading at OSU on April 8th at 5:30 p.m. in Denny Hall in the Commons Room 311. And on April 9th, I'm going to be at Clintonville Books, our brand new local bookstore.
Right, wonderful local bookstore, yeah.
And I'm going to do something very fun there that I have not yet done, but I'm going to be doing it at bookstores around the country. I will be talking about the book, but I will also be giving live on-the-spot advice.
Oh, that's your other job. We're going to get to that later.
I have never done, like, all right, ask me questions. I will give you family, parenting, and relationship advice. And they thought it would be a fun thing for me to do. So I'm doing my first one in Columbus, and then I'm off to do one in Des Moines.
Yeah, divorce SOB. Okay. Advice from Michelle Herman. We're going to talk more about Michelle's career and trajectory, but I want to go back to Quick Picks with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. What's everybody reading? And let's skip the line.
All right. Let's talk about tuberculosis.
Why not?
Why not? Well, it's an amazing book. This is John Green's new book. John Green is you know, the YouTube sensation. He's written young adult novels. The Fault in Our Stars was a huge hit in a film. And with The Anthropocene Reviewed, which was his previous book, he's dipping his toe into nonfiction. So this book is called Everything is Tuberculosis, The History and Persistence of Our Deadliest Infection. And when he's saying everything is tuberculosis, he's not kidding. He's really looking into how that disease has shaped history, and it has touched so many aspects of history. So why tuberculosis? So he didn't know anything about it until recently, where he went to Sierra Leone with his wife. They were visiting a hospital that they were patrons of. And they asked him, would you like to go to the TB clinic? And he said, is tuberculosis still a thing? And yes. So he toured this. And a young man just charmed him. His name was Henry. And gave him this tour, just this vivacious young person, gave him this tour of the clinic. And the person's name is Henry. And John has a son named Henry, and at the time he was 9 years old. He assumed that this Henry was also 9 years old. He's 17, but looks 9 because of what tuberculosis has done to his body. So it consumes the body, which is why throughout history it's been called consumption. So some people know it by that name. So he became fascinated by this, and he says how he writes while he's thinking so that he can process the information. And so this book has come from that. And he tells the story about the history, but also how it has impacted Henry and Henry's family and Henry's community and the people who work at the hospital. And there's so many fascinating pieces of history that tuberculosis has touched. The Beatles, Ringo Starr learned to play the drums while he was in a sanatorium recovering from tuberculosis. Colorado Springs exists because of tuberculosis. It was a tuberculosis colony. Beauty standards came from tuberculosis. So, you know, back in the time of Charlotte Bronte, you know, this tuberculosis was thought to make a woman more beautiful. You know, the skin was paler, the body was emaciated, the eyes were bigger. And even as she was dying and her sisters had already died from tuberculosis, she wrote that she understands that it is a flattering malady. And so it gave us, gave us beauty standards that we can't meet. So thanks, tuberculosis, for that one. He talks about cowboy hats are because of tuberculosis. So a man named John, who was a hat maker, moved across the country because it was thought that if you lived in a drier climate, so going west, it would help your lungs. And so this man named John moved out west, and he thought people had terrible hats. And so his name is John Stetson, and he created the cowboy hat because people had really bad hats. But without tuberculosis, would we have a cowboy hat? Maybe not.
And I noticed that that's really a quick pick, too.
It is a quick pick. Book. And it's not a long book. This is less than 200 pages. And John could take any topic and make it fascinating. He's a great writer, and he weaves in the stories together. So it is a page turner. I thought when he announced it, I'm like, I don't know if I can read a whole book on tuberculosis, but I am, and I'm fascinated by it. And my husband said yesterday, he's like, are you going to be talking about tuberculosis for the next month? And I said, yes. I am. And you will listen to it and you will like it. And I think anyone who reads this is going to want to tell everyone else what they've learned. It's fascinating.
You know, he is such a great author and writer. And the thing is that when I saw this book coming out, I only know him through his young adult books. And I saw this and I thought, I couldn't make the connection. But my first reaction was, I didn't want to lose the magic, though, that I have found in him from his young adult books. I thought this was going to be too serious. I don't want to go towards this. I mean, but it's getting a lot of press. But from the way you're talking about it, it sounds like it won't be that great of a leap. So, no. In other words, people shouldn't, if they only know him from through his young adult books, to not veer away from this.
Because he's a great storyteller.
Yeah.
And so he's able to take what he has learned and weave that into a story that is compelling. Mm-hmm. And a page-turner.
The latest from Chris Hickey and the Columbus Library, a quick picks about tuberculosis. Cassie Rose, give us a happy book. I mean, is anybody happy?
Well,
let's be miserable. Why not? Come on.
Well, I can give you a book where by an author who pretty much, this is the third book I've read by him, Robert Seethaler. And I can tell you that he has, one of his themes throughout his books is that happiness and contentment exists and can be found in just a daily life, your normal daily life. And this book is called The Cafe with No Name. And the main character is a man named Robert Simon. It's 1966. It's Vienna, Austria. And he has, his childhood was, he lost his parents in the war, so he grew up in an orphanage. And he's now working at a marketplace in Vienna, and he rents a room from a war widow. And he sees that there is a cafe that has been closed and abandoned on a corner street, and he decides he's going to reopen it. And he takes out the lease, and he opens this cafe, and everybody begins to gather there. He has no experience whatsoever in terms of running a cafe. And for him, he has the joy of starting it, meeting people. And of course, there are all the personalities coming in. It's kind of like a Cheers in a way. You've got the beefy, you know, entertainment wrestler coming in, falling in love with a waitress. You have the painter who is promiscuous and coming in and his girlfriend running after and screaming her guts out at him. You have the card player who, if he drinks too much, he has a glass eye, and if he drinks too much, he starts to freak people out with what he does with the glass eye. I'll just leave it at that. But the point of the book, and actually the wonder of the book, I will say, is that you keep turning the pages. I got halfway through the book, and it's a small book, and I thought, why do I want to keep reading this book? Because nothing happens. And but that's the beauty of it.
I love a book in which nothing happens.
Yes, it is. I mean, the furnace blows up and there's also some, you know, guy's got a kick out of the cafe. But you see that this Robert Simon is happy, he's content. And Seethaler is not driving that point home. You are just seeing this, that it's enough. Yeah. To be going to the cafe every day and to be surrounded by these people, the companionship that is there, the joy that is there, the advice that he gets from the war widow. It's just a wonderful book. It's satisfying. There's hope in it. And it's just, it's a good and believable and realistic ending. It's really well done.
And that is a recommendation from Cassie Rose. Give us, again, the title and the author, just so people know.
It's called The Cafe with No Name, and it's Robert Seethaler.
Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her blog is very important to anybody who loves to read. It's called thelongestchapter.com. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show. And Michelle Herman, I want to come back to you because about one of your other jobs is as an advice columnist. And I hear you're real mean to people.
You always say that. It is absolutely untrue.
Where do we find your column, first of all?
I write my column for Slate. Slate has many advice columns. One of them is the care and feeding column, and there are multiple care and feeding columnists. I have the Sunday beat. Every Sunday, for free, you can read my advice. It started out as being strictly a parenting advice column, but we get lots of letters that I think of as childing questions. They're asking about how to deal with their parents, and it branches out to marriage and family and relationships in general. And it is like my favorite job I've ever had.
Really?
I've been doing it now for 6 years, and it gives me great pleasure. I mean, it also, you know, it's a deadline I have, so it's a a thing every week. I know it's going to happen no matter what else is going on. I need to sit down for a few hours and pick some questions out of the massive bank of questions that come rolling in.
They just send you a whole slew of...
When somebody, if you want to write, go to Care and Feeding at Slate, and there is a link, and you can write in for advice. And that advice, that those questions populate a gigantic Google Doc, which I have access to. We all do. And we go through and we pick the ones we want. And it's, I don't know, to me, it's a job I was born for. Although, you know, neither my husband nor my daughter will read the column.
Really?
They think it's
That's
too...
That's interesting.
They think it's too weird. It took me the longest time to find this out. Because they were never commenting on it. It's just too weird to read me telling other people how to live their lives. I love to do it. And in real life, I am committed to never giving anyone advice unless they ask for it. And here are people asking for it. So it's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, Ann Landers, I'm sure, was always asked, so Ann, what was the most weird or incredible thing you were?
You know, I know. And people ask me that, and I never have an answer to it. I really don't. It seems to me, I've been trying to think about like writing about the art of advice columns, because one of the things that strikes me is that almost every letter begins with a long litany of complaints and then gets to a sentence like, but the real problem is. And it is true that I sometimes scold people a little bit. I do, but only lovingly and gently. That's what I am known for, I believe.
You can find Michelle's column at Slate.
Yes.
Out at slate.com, Michelle Herman's advice column.
Does it say, are you like Dear Michelle, like it was
no,
Dear Abby?
It's Dear Karen Feeding, but my byline is there.
So your name is out there, yes.
Yes, I will send you a link, Cassie.
Oh, yeah. You send me a link, too,
I'll send everybody. If you search Slate, Karen Feeding, Michelle Herman, every Care and Feeding column comes
up. Oh, my gosh.
I read it regularly.
Oh, really?
Oh, I'm so...
Is she right?
So am I mean?
Yeah. No, I don't think you're mean at all. I think you give people things they need to hear, and sometimes those things are hard to hear.
Oh.
But you drop some truth bombs.
Oh, well,
so
see?
I like it.
So, you know, you said you thought I was going to sit on the porch with my feet up.
You haven't done that yet.
Well, no. I wrote this entire book sitting on my porch with my feet up. I mean, I do sit on my porch with my feet up. I've actually written two entire books since retiring. I just haven't published the other one yet.
Just when you're not dancing, because you're there all the time.
Every night I dance.
Really?
Every day I write. On weekends, it's flipped. I dance during the day, and I write at night. And, you know, and then there's the advice column. I've also started mentoring aspiring writers at Madison Correctional Institution.
That's wonderful.
Oh, and then there's the Harmony Project.
We're going to talk about that in a minute when I come back from our next break. This is All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Book. We're talking with Cassie Rose, WOHU's book critic, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library, who brings us quick picks, and Michelle Herman, whose new book is called If You Say So. Let's go back to Cassie Rose and ask for another recommendation. What are you reading? What should we read?
I think I'll share with you a book called School of Love by Olivia Manning. And I've talked about Olivia Manning before. She wrote the Balkan trilogy, which I really loved. And this book is one of her standalone books. She wrote in the mid-20th century. And typically she writes about ordinary people and how they live through history or a historical moment. And typically for her, that is World War II and much of what the Balkan trilogy is. In this one, it's 1945, and there's a young man named Felix, and he's in Iraq. He's lost both his parents, and he is now going to Jerusalem, where he's going to live with a family member whom he's never met, until he can get back to England. And Jerusalem is filled with refugees. It's a time when there's tension between the Arabs and the Jews. And also the British mandate there is coming to an end, the colonialism. And he's living in this boarding house with this relative. And she is, well, she's a miser. She is judgmental. She is not very pleasant to be with. And yet, ironically, she belongs to a fundamentalist group called the Ever Readies that are about love and charity and kindness to people. And she doesn't seem to bring that to her boarding house. Anyway, this is a wonderful book in that, again, it's another one where it's just a good book. You're not going to have any bombs going off. You're not going to have any controversy here. You just get into loving the characters and how they put up with this woman who is very difficult to live with, but they need to live there. And the turning point comes when a young woman shows up who is 4 months pregnant. Her husband has died in the war, and she changes everything because she won't put up with this woman that owns the boarding house. So that becomes, and she influences Felix, the young man. It's, once again, all I can say about it, it's just a good book. It's a good story, and you love just following the characters and what happens to them.
A good yarn.
A good yarn.
And mm-hmm. That's one of our favorite publisher, yours and mine, right?
Yes, it is, NYRB, New York Review of Books.
They specialize in taking books that have been unjustly neglected and bringing them back. Is that fair to say?
Correct. They bring great books back into print. And Olivia Manning is one of them. I mean, she wrote during a time where she was not, she was read and she was somewhat popular, but I think it was Iris Murdoch that was writing at the same time and got all the attention of the press. And so then they started making fun of her because Olivia Manning, because she started complaining. And so they started calling her Olivia Moaning because she wasn't getting enough attention. And they were saying, well, people are going to be reading you afterwards, because I ended up reading a lot about her. And they were telling her, well, people, your books are going to last. And that wasn't enough for her. But yet here, that's exactly what has happened.
It's never enough for us.
Yes,
I remember years ago in a profile in the Times Magazine, Corgeress and Boyle, mm-hmm. you know the term, T.C. Mm-hmm. Boyle, was asked if he could choose between adulation in his lifetime and getting no attention now but being read for generations. He said that you could you could cut off both his arms if in return he could have both those things.
Yeah.
We're not satisfied with
one or the other. Yes.
I've never forgotten it. And this is probably 40 years ago that I read this interview.
Well, because it would be a huge compliment to have people or critics and readers to say, your books are going to be last. The people in 2025, Olivia Manning, are going to be reading your book. And
It's still hard if in your lifetime you feel that people are not paying attention to you. It's hard to. I try this with my husband, the painter. I try to promise him that, these paintings will be around. People will be talking about them. He said, what good does that do me? So there you go.
Anyway, we're talking about them now. We're talking about everybody's work now here on All Sides Weekend Books. And I'm going to ask Chris Hickey. Now, we've had Fatal Illnesses and we've had The Hunger Games. Come on already. What do you
Let's go to The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
All right. So this is Gregory Maguire's new book. It's called Elfie, A Wicked Childhood. So you probably know Wicked from the musical, the film, but he wrote Wicked in 1995. And the book is darker and doesn't have the happy ending that, the musical and the movie will likely have.
Much
darker.
Really,
but it's fantastic.
Know.
Wicked is amazing. If you haven't read it, you should. And his other books are also wonderful. And he really started kind of that trend of fairy tale retelling, villain redemption, villain backstory trend. And Elfie is the childhood of Elphaba, otherwise known as the Wicked Witch of the West. And she's born in Munchkinland, and her father is a traveling pastor. He's highly religious, and he's traveling Munchkinland. And when he is traveling, his wife entertains gentlemen callers, And she's born and she's green and they're horrified. And they treat her awfully. She has a traumatic childhood. And in Wicked, she is...
It ain't easy being green.
It ain't easy being green. You've got that right.
Sorry, I had to. Yes. I date myself. Go ahead.
She is very much in Wicked an eco-terrorist, and she is fighting for the rights of talking animals. And in this book, you find out why. Like, she starts to, you know, she's close to some talking animals, and she sees their plight and just becomes a warrior for them. So we get the backstory of that. And this book will take us all the way from her early childhood to when she goes to the University of Shiz and meets Galinda and becomes this incredible.
So it overlaps
magic.
A bit. Because
just
there
a teeny
is,
bit.
Do get,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Huh. So it's a great backstory. And Gregory Maguire has said, I don't know if she's wicked or not. I want you to read this and you decide. And he also said something really interesting in a recent interview where he feels that Frank Baum, who wrote the original series, intended for Oz to be a mirror for America. So it's interesting. So this is going to be an immersive fantasy where if you love her, if you don't like her, you're going to be drawn in to her story.
And you like a prequel too.
I love the backstory. I love especially a villain backstory. It's
and you
just
have to remember
fun.
That Frank Baum was writing over 100 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, so these, you know, just
the staying power of the Wizard of Oz.
When Judy Garland put on those slippers, it was not a new book. You know,
right?
Yeah, it was
Do you know the book was? I don't want to turn my phone on to look it up. There is a novel that I taught it because I taught a retellings class back in the old days at OSU. And it's a novel that is a retelling of The Wizard of Oz, a fictional biography of Judy Garland, and a story of the AIDS crisis.
Oh, really?
Yes. The author's name is Jeffrey something. Oh, my God. I can't believe I can't think of it. But the novel is called Was, and I know it's still available. And
WAS
is Oz Was, and it is such a gorgeous, wonderful novel. I thought I'd throw that out.
Great,
there.
That's a recommendation from our own Michelle Herman.
Hey, I have more. I have some delightful books.
Go
to
ahead,
talk.
Go ahead.
While you're looking for delight, do you all know Eleanor Lipman's novels? Eleanor Lipman. She's older than I am. She's been around forever. She writes the most delightful novels, and I am in a moment in my life where I only want to read delightful novels. So I will not be reading about Elfie right now or the book about tuberculosis at the moment. I only want to read books that are going to fill me with joy, and I only want to watch junk reality TV. That's it. Those are the two things. So Lipman's newest book, it just came out, is called Every Tom, Dick, and Harry. And it is just, it's a romp. It's really a romp, and it's got a little bit of everything in it. There's a romance in it. There's a little bit of mystery in it. I'm searching now. There's my notes. Its central character runs an estate sale business called Estate of Mind. And it really includes pretty much everything you may be needing right now in a book, including a 19th century style perfect ending in which all the strings get pulled together. And it's tremendously satisfying. But she's been writing for over 30 years, and her literary universe is so distinct in that you see these kind of like Ann Tyler, who's another one who writes delightful books and who also has a new book out. Speaking of which, 3 Days in June may not be her best book, but even a second or third rate Ann Tyler novel is better than most people's first rate books, I think. See, when I hear that a book is coming out by a writer I love, as early as I hear it, I get on the whole list at the library so that, you know, I'm like number one or number two on that list. And then I buy copies for friends. That's the way I deal with supporting writers, but not filling my house with any more books because I've run out of room.
Was the novel you just mentioned was written by Jeff Wyman. Thank you for Chris Johnson. Yes.
Jeff Wyman.
Yes.
Highly recommended.
We'll look for that. One thing I wanted to ask you, Michelle Herman, before we have to adjourn. You mentioned you were mentoring an incarcerated young writer, and I believe you may be doing that under the aegis of the Harmony Project, which is important to you.
Yes, it's not under the Harmony Project, but it happened because of the Harmony Project, as so many things
happen. Lot of wonderful things happen because of the Harmony Project.
The Harmony Project has a prison arts program where we, at numerous prisons in Central Ohio, we go in and we have choirs. And this season, I volunteered to be part of the choir at Madison Correctional Institution in London, Ohio, where I met an incarcerated man named Tyrone, who just won my heart. And it's not only Tyrone that I'm mentoring. It's roughly 40 men who are there, who've been in for a long time, and who are really passionate about writing. And what I'm, my main goal is to teach them, the ones who are interested in this, how to teach writing so that they can sustain their own writing workshops. And I have to say, when I first started doing it, I contacted every writer I know in the U.S. And I said, I'm doing this, but they need books to read. You can't become a writer without having good books. And they have a library, but it's not full of the kind of books I wanted to give them. And people were so responsive. I have been able to donate hundreds and hundreds of books. And I have to do a special shout out to the poet, Jericho Brown, whose publisher, Copper Canyon, sent me 100 copies of his latest book so that everyone at Madison who wants to read it can read it, and we're going to have a book club. So this is, yeah, this has become another thing that's really important.
Something related to the wonderful Harmony Project.
Yes.
I know you've been involved with them for many years, and I'm proud to tell everybody that David Brown, the head of the Harmony Project, will be on the show next Friday. So we'll look forward to that. We have time for one more recommendation from Cassie Rose.
I'm going to recommend a book that came out this week called Theft, and it's a book by the Nobel laureate, the 2021 Nobel laureate of fiction, Abdulrazak Gurnah, G-U-R-N-A-H. And first of all, I'm going to say, if you walk into a bookstore and you read the dust jacket summary of the book, that does not do it justice. I would guide you to the Guardian book review, which tells you, one, this book will keep you on your toes. I've not read it yet, but I'm eager to read it. And it's about the coming of age of three young people in Tanzania in the year 2000 or the early 2000s. And Kazim has come home from university, and in his house is a young manservant, Badar. And they become friends. And there is also a friend, Fauzia, who is a young girl who is smothered by her parents. She has in her upbringing because she has epilepsy. And the three of them become friends. But something happens, which obviously the title gives away. And Badar is falsely accused. And what I'm reading about this book is that you are kept on your toes because, on the one hand, sometimes you know what is going on, but the characters don't. And other times they know, but you don't. And also there's some familial family background information that comes in that feeds it. And this author just weaves it together so perfectly that you just get enmeshed into this world and what's happening. And best of all, that at the end, the Guardian said it's a very cathartic ending, and Kirkus Reviews said it's a happy ending. Even though that there is some betrayal that is going on and maybe some hardship. It sounds like it is just a really perfect book in all the complexities being woven together and characters that are unique, young people that are unique growing up in Tanzania.
And that he is the Nobel laureate.
He won in 2021 for fiction, and this is his first book since.
And it's called Theft.
It's called Theft.
The recommendation from Cassie Rose. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Michelle Herman is reading at Clintonville Books on April 9th. Is that right? On High Street near Como. What time will you be there?
I believe it's at 6.
Okay. Her new book is called If You Say So. Chris Hickey has brought us quick picks from the Columbus Library. Get on that list and, you know, go look at the display and skip the lines. And Cassie Rose blog is thelongestchapter.com. And that is our show for today. I thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for giving us radio. Have a good day.